Greetings once again, and welcome back. My name is Doug McBurney, and you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. That's right, I said welcome back. It is the show where we don't take calls. We don't tolerate sponsors. But we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. And we're going to start this week in the Colorado legislature. Yes, the state of Colorado, way out west here. Way up high where we look down upon all you other people. The Colorado legislature is celebrating the passage in the House of Colorado's felony DUI law. Yes, a felony. Colorado is one of the few states without a felony DUI. We got fellas out here with 6 or 8 DUIs. And anyway, they've introduced finally a felony DUI law, and the Republicans are all celebrating. If the bill is to become a law, then on your 4th DUI in Colorado, it will be a felony. The 4th DUI. So this is where we've come as we regulate crime. You can have 3 DUIs, and then but on that 4th one, that's where we're going to get serious. We're going to call it a felony. It's just a pretty sad and pathetic state of the Republican Party here in Colorado and elsewhere. And at last I checked, I was still registered as a Republican for some reason. Did I unregister? I may have renounced my registration. I regularly renounce it. And then I'll sign back up again, like a battered wife that keeps coming back. But I think I renounced it maybe for the final time. I may never even vote again. I've lost so much faith in the Democrat system with the Republicans, all of them. Just pathetic. So let's go instead. We'll leave Colorado and go downhill to Staten Island. Downhill a long way to Staten Island. With reason number 874... to get or keep your kids out of the government schools, a Staten Island mom is accused of threatening to blow up her daughter's school after her daughter failed the Regents exam. Now, she says she didn't do it. Now, the teachers there says she threatened to blow the school up. She says, no. The teachers at the school are all liars, said the mom. This is the hapless mom, the school where she sends her daughter. She says, well, they're all a bunch of liars. I never threatened to blow up no school. And she sends her kid to the school and then threatens to blow. I don't understand it. The hapless parents of the 21st century sending their kids into a den of liars. And then the kid is so dumb, she can't pass the Regents exam. And the Regents exam, it ain't what it used to be, folks. It used to be, I think it was for some sort of academic status if you could pass the Regents exam. Now, if you pass the Regents exam and you're accepted into an actual university, the first thing you start with is remedial English. And her daughter was so dumb that she failed it, and now mom's upset. So reason number 874, your kids might be blown up by an irate, hapless mother. Yes, so get or keep your kids out of the government schools. We move from the government schools and continue the downward trajectory to the bad religion file. This is from ChristianHeadlines.com. Earlier in the week, or I should say last week, I had to go do a radio show here in Denver, and the host said he wanted to do some upbeat news. Doesn't want to be so depressing all the time. So I scanned the internet looking for upbeat good news, and I couldn't find any. So we went on the air and we did the typical, pretty much the end of civilization show that I always do. I can't help myself. But as I was looking for good news, I came across this story from one actress, Julianne Moore. Now, I personally am not familiar with this person, but I'm sure that many of you people are familiar because she's apparently a famous actress who's done movies. Are we familiar with this person in any way? I can't even picture this person in my mind. She did Hannibal. Oh, the second one? That was weak. That was just pathetic. All right, so actress Julianne Moore lands in the Bad Religion file this week. She said that she does not believe in God, and she believes that people create their own lives. She said that with a straight face. Here's what she says about religion and life, the universe, and everything. Julianne Moore, who's a famous actress. She says, quote, "We impose order and narrative on everything in order to understand it. Otherwise, there's nothing but chaos." That statement right there, to me, it's nothing but chaos. I don't understand it. But apparently she's imposed her narrative and her order, and she understands it. She says that she believes everyone is in control of their own lives. And she says, quote, "The idea that you can create your life is a great idea. I totally believe it. Totally. I feel I have completely created my own life," she says. Be interesting to talk with her on her deathbed and just say, "Julianne, just get up. Just create your own. Come on. Pancreatic cancer, get out of here. Just create your own. Julianne, get up. Come on. Go run a marathon." Let's see. She was asked by a reporter back in 2002 what she would like to hear God say to her in heaven. And she said, quote, "Well, I'd like to hear God say, I guess you were wrong. I do exist." No. That's what she said. She says if she meets God, she imagines he'll say, "I guess you were wrong, Julianne. I do exist." No. Yeah. Anyway, it's hard to string it all together. But humanism and self-worship is far more deadly than ISIS or Al-Qaeda or the Al-Nusra Front or any of those Muslim terrorists. It's humanism and self-worship that's going to land actress Julianne Moore out of the Bad Religion file and straight on jet rockets to hell is what's going to happen to her. And there's nobody in ISIS or Al-Qaeda or anywhere else who could send Julianne to hell, but she's going to create her own life in hell. Yeah. Okay, fine. Reporting on actors, or actresses, I should say, whom I can't even picture in my own mind. I'm going to wear that as a badge of honor, that most actors, when I hear their name, I cannot picture who they are. I think, you know, going back maybe to the early 90s, I just stopped watching movies. I could no longer suspend disbelief. I can't watch movies because I know they're acting, and I just can't get over that. I can watch documentaries, but that's as close as I can get.
I'm ashamed I know
her. What's that now?
I'm ashamed.
Oh, my extremely attractive audio engineer is somewhat ashamed of herself that she knew who Julianne Moore was. So anyway, we'll keep working on that. Just keep sequestering ourselves from society at large. Anyway, maybe you're wrong about the Hannibal thing. We'll hear about that. You people in the audience, somebody write and tell me what this person has done as far as entertainment. Actually, I really don't care.
Yeah.
Let's move on into the politics file. This is from CNSNews.com. Speaking at the Brookings Institution in Washington, D.C. last Friday, National Security Advisor Susan Rice said part of President Barack Obama's national security strategy is fighting the very real threat of climate change and promoting gay rights. That's what we need to secure peace in the world, is fewer carbon dioxide molecules in the universe, in the atmosphere, I should say. Well, maybe the whole universe. CO2 could permeate the whole universe. Maybe that's how it all ends. But that's what we need, is less CO2 and more homosexuals. And we're bound to have a secure peace in the world. When asked about the Islamic State specifically, she said, quote, "The United States is committed to countering the corrosive ideology of violent extremism." She then called for a sense of perspective when assessing that threat. And then she went on to say, look, this isn't like World War II. Besides, we got a lot going on. We can't afford to be buffeted by alarmism, she said, when it comes to people who lock other people in cages and then set them on fire. Let's not be alarmist about that. After all, it was just a man burned to death on video in front of God and everybody in the whole world. No need to be alarmed. Move right along. There's nothing to see here, says National Security Advisor Susan Rice. She says, in regards to national security, the president released his annual national security strategy, apparently, this past week. And she said equality for homosexuals is a major focus in 2015. They want to address equality based on gender and the rights of people who oppose gender classifications. They don't want to be called a boy or a girl. The Bruce Jenners of the world. Yeah, those types. Those are going to help us secure peace in our time. So this is, by the way, if you don't know who Susan Rice is, she is the White House National Security Advisor, and she is an official member of the Four Horsewomen of the Apocalypse. Yes, I want to set everyone straight, including Michael Savage, because he doesn't seem to know exactly who the Four Horsewomen of the Apocalypse are, but I believe I have figured out the theorem behind the Four Horsewomen of the Apocalypse, a theorem in which Susan Rice plays a significant role. The Four Horsewomen of the Apocalypse are Samantha Power, Victoria Nuland, Valerie Jarrett, and the aforementioned Susan Rice. Now, there is a fifth Horsewoman of the Apocalypse I've noticed. And that's an interchangeable person. It can be any leftist female who happens to be exerting influence over either Barry or the president. Yeah, Barack Obama. Yeah, Barry. Or the president. Now, who's the president? Well, refer back to the list I just gave you of the Four Horsewomen of the Apocalypse. Samantha Power, Victoria Nuland, Valerie Jarrett, and Susan Rice. And the fifth could be anyone. Could be Hillary Clinton, Nancy Pelosi, Michelle Obama, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Elena Kagan, Sonia Sotomayor, Janet Napolitano, Kathleen Sebelius, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, Christine Lagarde, Maureen Dowd, Oprah Winfrey. Is there anyone we miss? Beyonce, possibly, yes. The fifth horsewoman of the apocalypse is interchangeable. And so there, we now have an official list. It's been recorded for posterity. Just exactly who the Four Horsewomen of the Apocalypse are. And I want to give credit to Michael Savage for coming up with the theory of the Four Horsewomen. But leave it to the Weekly Worldview to actually define it and name names. That's right, we named names. There you have it. Okay, so that's now out of the politics file. Seeing as Susan Rice was addressing national security, as regards climate change and homosexuals, let's move into the war file. I think that's appropriate at this point, since the war goes on. This is a story out of the Washington Times. The U.S. Army's preparatory course for the Ranger School has completed its most recent cycle, and 5 out of 26 women completed the course. That's right. Now, this isn't the actual Ranger School. This is the prep course for the Ranger School. This is where they try to wash out the weaklings, weed out the weaklings, right? And so 5 women have actually passed the prep course. Now, the Army considers this a reliable litmus test for which soldiers have a chance at passing the actual Ranger School. And the Army has publicly stated that it hopes 40 women will pass the prep course between now and April and be prepared for the next session of Army Ranger School. Let's see here. The Army says, we are conducting a deliberate and professional way forward to the integrated assessment. So the Four Horsewomen of the Apocalypse have told the Army that you're going to have more girls. Whether you like it or not, you better get more girls in the front lines. We want girls on the front lines. We want them taking fire, hand to hand with the bayonets. That's what they want. And so they've told the Army in no uncertain terms that you will have more girls in combat positions, especially in the officer corps, And the Army says we are conducting a deliberate and professional way forward to the integrated assessment, according to a major general who was appropriately neutered by the four horsewomen. Let's see here. The four horsewomen may figure prominently in today's broadcast. So I'm going to keep that list handy right here in front of me. Let's see here. Female soldiers will begin attending United States Army Ranger School in April. And they're going to be tested on everything from eating snakes to sleeping in the mud to all of this, even shooting their guns over there at Ranger School. Now, this may finally settle the old argument of who's tougher, Army Rangers or Marine Infantry. That's been a debate going on, well, way back. And well, if they pass Ranger School, if the girls start to pass Ranger School, keep in mind, as we reported just a few weeks ago, that to date, not a single girl has passed the United States Marine Corps Infantry Officers course. Not a single girl. Now we've got near half a dozen set to go into Ranger School. If the girls start passing Ranger School, that'll definitely tell us something. And it may finally settle who really is tougher. Is it the Rangers? Or is it the infantry, or is it the four horsewomen of the apocalypse and the new Amazon brigade? And I am your host, Doug McBurney. So glad to have you aboard as we ride ahead into another week without forgetting what has happened in the week past. I'd like to focus your attention now on the current enemy, the Islamic State. Oh, maybe I should start with Robert Gates. I think I should start with Robert Gates, the former Secretary of Defense, United States. He didn't issue a statement. Let's see here. He was speaking to someone. Politico is reporting that, according to Robert Gates, Barry's goal to destroy the Islamic State is unrealistic and unattainable. It says that's the former, well, I guess, thankfully, the former Secretary of State. I think destroying the Islamic State is completely realistic and absolutely attainable if someone puts their mind to it. I think what Robert Gates was alluding to is the fact that Barry has not put his mind to it. You'll remember that Barry and George W. Bush, possibly the dumbest man to ever occupy the White House, George W., they both wanted to focus on killing terrorists. Well, on Meet the Press last Sunday, Robert Gates said that, maybe the United States should not focus entirely on eradicating the group, but instead create an operation that contains the spread of Islamic State militants and denies them the ability to hang on to territory. In other words, Gates is basically endorsing a never-ending war in the Middle East against these Islamic maniac fanatics. And why shouldn't he? He's probably working for defense contractors right now. Now that he's retired, he's probably on the board of several defense contract companies who'll do quite well selling weapons to the United States military as we go to contain and deny the Islamic State instead of eradicating them, annihilating them to the last man. Robert Gates says, with the means that Barry has approved so far, he says, destroying ISIS is an unattainable objective. And that's probably sadly true. He says, Gates says that a reinvasion of Iraq is a false option. But he does insist that a few hundred troops should be stationed in the region. And I have a company, by the way, that can supply them with weapons. Yeah, anyway. All right. So I'm glad Robert Gates is not the Secretary of Defense anymore. Next. Well, who is next? Who is the Secretary of Defense now? I think Barry has nominated the sixth horsewoman of the apocalypse. I forget. Isn't there a... I don't know who the Secretary of Defense is. I know it's Hagel at the moment, but he's on his way out. And I think Barry's going to bring in a minority female to just for diversity's sake. And she's going to contain and deny the Islamic State. And, we'll be at war there for quite some time. And that's enough, as I was alluding to earlier, with the Republicans here in Colorado celebrating the fact that we're going to let people commit 3 DUIs and then we're going to charge them with a felony. Boy, we're going to drop the hammer. We're really going to get serious. I mean, I know we make lots and lots of money off these DUIs, but we're going to get serious. And a fourth time, nope, now it's a felony now. It's going to cost you $20,000 instead of $10,000. So you've got people who think they're conservative basically regulating criminal behavior. And now we've got Robert Gates and other people who think that there's some kind of military leaders who are happy with regulating fanatic head-chopping maniacs. Well, let's just regulate that. Let's just degrade and contain. And anyway, the Islamic State's just a bunch of criminals. If we attack them with a reasonable amount of zeal and a couple of brigades of Marines, we could drive them into the sea and kill all of them, I believe. All right, maybe more than a couple of brigades of Marines. We could let the Army participate. They could send their new Amazon Ranger Brigade. In fact, we could put them at the point of the spear. Let's put Susan Rice at the tip of the spear. Yes, I want to see Valerie Jarrett march against the Islamic State. I want to see Samantha Power with a 50-caliber machine gun on the hip. Right? Yeah, mowing them down. Anyway, the Islamic State is nothing to be all that scared about. Listen to this. From the International Business Times, the treasurer of the Islamic State in Syria is one Abu Abeda. You've heard of him, right? Abu Abeda al-Masri. Well, he has absconded with funds amounting to about $1 million in cash, and he has fled because he's just a crook. And he took $1 million and he ran off. He has abandoned his Islamic brothers there on the battlefield and has retired to parts unknown with about $1 million in cash. Let's see. You may or may not be aware that the Islamic State imposed the zakat tax in the areas that are under its control. The zakat tax is surprisingly similar to Democrat political philosophy in that it is a forced charity tax. I guess in Islam you're supposed to give 2.5% of your income to the poor every year. And because Muslims, just like everyone else, tend not to really keep the rules of their own religion, the mullahs impose the tax. So if you don't give your 2.5%, well, the mullahs are going to take it, or they're going to burn down your business, cut off your head, and steal your wife and daughter. So, yeah, it's the religion of peace, as you know. So the Islamic State imposed this tax, and apparently Abu Abeda al-Masri was in charge of administering the 2.5% charity tax. And, he took the money and he ran away because he's just a criminal. And the Islamic State's basically a criminal gang who has entered into the field of military conquest, which, of course, now relieves us or anyone else of the burden of treating them as criminals with any kind of rights. They should all simply now be exterminated to the last man. in a very warlike and hostile manner. But so it's just an example of why we don't need to fear these people. I mean, they're a ragtag, halfway organized bunch of criminals, maniacs, drug addicts, and just worshipers of darkness. And so we can, in fact, destroy ISIS if we decide to. Or maybe we'll let Jordan do it. I've got, yeah, I think that's the next story. So did I have anything else from this? Yes, he ran off with the money. The Islamic State has forced merchants and industrialists to pay a 2.5% of each sale goes to the charity tax there, the zakat. Just, it reminds me of Barry's medical device tax in Obamacare. Wasn't that 2.5%? I wonder, he probably got that right out of the Koran. Barry. Let's see now. Let's go to Jordan. Some serious news from the war file. Jordanian fighter pilots, according to Fox News, have carried out devastating sorties against ISIS, making good on their king's vow of vengeance for the burning death of the captured airmen. I saw that Breitbart had a link to the whole entire video of this pilot being burned to death, burned alive. Anyway, and they had a big warning. This is the actual video, unedited. I didn't click it. I can't watch this stuff anymore. I mean, I watched Nick Berg when they cut his head off back around 2003. I forget Nick Berg, and I could never watch that again. There's no need to watch it anymore. We know what these maniacs are. Well, the Jordanians have launched airstrikes. The latest reportedly killed 55 members of ISIS, including a single commander known as the Prince of Nineveh. The Prince of Nineveh. These are throwback. I'm telling you that these Islamic State fanatic criminals, they worship the likes of Nebuchadnezzar and the kings of the Medo-Persian Empire, the Babylonian Empire. They want to go right back to all that. And I think it's because they worship the same pagan god from way back then. It's just the latest version of the same pagan god, I do believe, is Allah over there in the Islamic pagan religion. King Abdullah, who apparently is a trained fighter pilot from what I heard, King Abdullah says that Jordan will, here's what he said, a quote, we will fight the Islamic State until we run out of fuel and bullets. After they killed one of Jordan's citizens. Now, admittedly, they killed him in a very horrific fashion, burning him to death. But Barry has presided over the hacking off of how many American heads? And have we ever heard Barry vow to fight and destroy? And I haven't heard him. It's just embarrassing. We got the basically a tin horn dictator of a third world backward cesspool of a nation like Jordan. And we're going to rely on them now to take the fight to the Islamic State. And I think Barry couldn't be happier that he can just go back on the golf course and give King Abdullah's cell phone number to Valerie Jarrett and Samantha Power and let them run the whole thing. I think he's cool with that. But there are a few problems with that, with relying on Jordan now to take the fight to the Islamic State. We're reminded by the reporters over at Fox News that Jordan had previously been thought to be home to thousands of supporters of the Islamic State. And the country is beset by social problems, a sharp economic downturn, high unemployment among young men. Let's see. And these are the guys who are going to go now and do our dirty work for us. Jordan executed two Iraqi al-Qaeda prisoners. You remember those two. They said they were going to execute 10, but they've only executed two. I'm not sure what happened there. Maybe the paperwork, maybe there's a mix-up in the paperwork and they'll get to those other. They've got dozens of al-Qaeda and Islamic State prisoners in custody in Jordan. And why they haven't executed every last one of them, I just don't know. My guess is they probably got a phone call late at night from Victoria Nuland, and she said, look, If you execute any more, we're going to have to cut off the welfare check. And so Jordan has had to subdue its desire for vengeance. Now, back in Washington, lawmakers from both parties have called on the administration to speed up deliveries of weapons to Jordan. That's the solution. And who do you think may have said that? Well, it's Senator John McCain. Yes, he says we must swiftly approve legislation calling for increased aid, which is weapons. He then repeated his criticism that the Obama administration has no strategy for dealing with the Islamic State. They've got no strategy. So what's McCain's solution? Let's send more weapons to the Muslims. We've got no strategy. Let's just send weapons. More weapons. Let's arm the moderates. Well, we don't know who the moderates are. Let's send more weapons. Well, we don't have a strategy, Mr. McCain. The strategy is send more weapons. I don't understand it. I mean, if there's no strategy, and we're not really sure who our friends are, maybe we shouldn't send more weapons unless they're in the hands of Americans who we can trust. I am your host, Doug McBurney, and this is the Weekly Worldview, and we are glad to have you aboard. But as my streaming tracker audio engineer pointed out, can we even trust Americans with loaded weapons anymore? Well, that's kind of depressing to think about, but you do wonder. I think I would trust Americans more than I would trust the Jordanians. Or the moderate Syrian opposition, whoever they are. Anyway, I'd just like to be able to track down the guns after all the smoke clears, get them back. It's the humanists versus the Satanists. I mean, the Muslims. So, the humanists. We've established that humanists and self-worshipping humanists at that are responsible for the death of more people than any Muslims ever were. Yeah. And I'm talking not just about physical death. I'm talking about the ultimate second death, the spiritual death, which the Islamists cannot impose upon anyone. But the humanists, well, they brainwash people into humanism and self-worship, and then they end up going straight to hell. But we've got to continue here in the war file, I think. Let's see. Shinzo Abe, over in Japan, he has vowed to make the terrorists pay the price for the two Japanese hostages who were executed, assassinated, brutally murdered, had their heads removed from their bodies over the past few weeks. And the New York Times reports that the crisis over the executions of the Japanese civilians could be a watershed for this long pacifist country. Some have described in Japan a level of shock not unlike that experienced by the Americans after the 2001 terrorist attacks. And Shinzo Abe is looking possibly to reestablish the Japanese military. And I hope they don't take a cue from us after 9/11, because we just went to war for 15 years and basically lost. So hopefully the Japanese would do a better job than we did. They may be shocked like us after 9/11. But hopefully they won't respond in such a ham-fisted manner as to step in and just utterly destroy the Middle East and lose the war to boot. It's sad to think about it, but now that America and the Allies have lost the Middle East, who else could possibly win it? Putin? Maybe King Abdullah, right? This is his big chance. King Abdullah, if I were King Abdullah, I would say, I don't want to be a part of your airstrikes. I will accept your air cover, but I'm going to march my armies in and I'm going to conquer this land, and then I'll do with it what I see fit at the end of the day. Somebody needs to do that, because that's the only thing that will eradicate the Islamic State fanatics. Let's see here. Anything else on Japan? The question is whether the trauma of the killings will drain Japan's will or stiffen its resolve. Gee, based on recent history of political leaders in general all over the world, my guess is it's the former. It will drain Japan's will. Yeah, I don't see them stiffening their resolve. And, well, it's just sad, but what can I say? That's how I see it. All right. Now, more from the war file. We'll never get out of the war file. Just like this war will never end, this is the never-ending war file. From the Jerusalem Post, European diplomats are telling Israeli officials that the United States and Iran are moving closer to an agreement that would allow the Iranian Islamic Republic, the original Islamic State, to keep their centrifuges and eventually just build a bomb. Yeah. But in exchange for being allowed to build their nuclear bomb, they are promising the United States to guarantee regional stability. So not only have we lost the Middle East, we're now going to hand it over to the Iranians. Because we don't have the nerve, we don't have the stomach for it, we're going to hand it over to the Iranians. The Jerusalem Post reports that John Kerry, Secretary of State, and his Iranian counterpart, Mohammed something or other, have discussed increasing the number of centrifuges which Iran would be permitted to keep, and in exchange, the Iranians would bring their influence to bear in order to ensure quiet in Iraq, Afghanistan, and Syria. Wow. Hmm. We're going to hand over the Middle East to the original Islamic State. And that's one way to eliminate the Islamic State, is to simply have it absorbed into the Islamic Republic there in Iraq. And then John McCain can declare victory and start selling weapons to Iran. Everybody's happy. We're giving the Middle East to the original Islamic State. I wonder if George W. Bush, in his brilliance, as he sought to spread democracy in Iraq, he said, you know, the Iraqi people want just what we want. They want democracy. They want freedom. Well, there might be a few of them that want that. But it was certainly not the job of a secular humanist democratic state to try to impose democratic secular humanism on the Middle East. It was always doomed to failure. George W. Bush thought that if we could magically give the Iraqis the ability to vote, everything would be okay. Well, George, you're really not that bright. That was never going to work. So now we've lost the Middle East and we're going to give it to the Iranians. Israeli officials, according to the Jerusalem Post, say that the U.S. in recent weeks has made significant concessions to the Iranians, so much so that they're now willing to permit Tehran to operate 6,500 centrifuges while lifting the sanctions that have been in place against Iran for the past decade. Well, Israel is concerned. Jerusalem Post reports that intelligence officials there believe that if this deal goes through, Tehran would be in a position to be able to assemble a nuclear bomb within months if it chooses to do so, if and when it chooses to do so. Well, the White House had a response to the concern in the Israeli intelligence community. The White House says it will prevent Iran from developing nuclear weapons. And they expect to get by with that. Well, don't worry. We'll prevent it. We'll prevent them from developing nuclear weapons. Don't worry. We have Barry's word on it, BB. Don't be concerned. The White House will stop the Iranians. Whew. Well, that's a relief. I was getting a little bit worried, what with letting them keep the centrifuges and, you know, with the uranium and the enrichment and all that, I was concerned. But now I see that the White House says it will prevent Iran from developing nuclear weapons. You can bet the day that the mullahs in Iran decide to build their bomb, they're going to get angry phone calls and tweets from Samantha Power, Victoria Nuland, Valerie Jarrett, and Susan Rice. And it's quite possible that Barry's mother-in-law may launch a hashtag against the Iranian nuclear weapon. And so don't you worry, folks. The White House has a plan, and they've got the personnel to carry it out. So don't worry about any of that. Those folks in Jerusalem are being buffeted by alarmism as they ponder the possibility of Iran basically taking over the Middle East and acquiring nuclear weapons. All right, that's just all alarmism. Now, we move into the science, really, file. Yes, this is real science. A new exhibition is on display. Let's see here. More than 100 cuneiform tablets are on display. They detail transaction and contracts between Judeans who were driven from Jerusalem by King Nebuchadnezzar around 600 B.C. I like this story because I just like stories that confirm the historicity of the Bible. Because there's a lot of people who say, oh, we don't know what's in the Bible. It's been translated 100 times, and we don't have any idea if any of that stuff is true. It's just a small, obscure tribe of goat herders who wrote their holy book. But it turns out that, you know, when archaeologists go to the Middle East to start digging for stuff, they take a copy of the Old Testament with them. And they found an amazing amount of these clay tablets describing the lives of the Jews exiled to Babylon 2,500 years ago. The display is being held at the Bible Lands Museum there in Jerusalem. And they detail rather mundane events, as a matter of fact. I mean, the exhibition details one Judean family over four generations, starting with the father, all the way to his grandson's five children, all with biblical Hebrew names. And it details minor events in their life, but gives us an amazing insight into what actually happened. Apparently, Nebuchadnezzar came to Jerusalem several times as he sought to expand his kingdom. And on one of the visits, as a matter of fact, coincided with the destruction of Jerusalem's first temple in 586 B.C. One exile back during that year saw around 1,500 people, Hebrews, make the perilous journey via Lebanon and Syria to the Fertile Crescent of southern Iraq, where the Judeans, as you can well imagine, traded, they ran businesses, they even helped in the administration of the kingdom, just like the Bible says. Yeah, right. You know the story of Daniel. He ended up running the kingdom. Well, I mean, was that after the Medo-Persians took over? I have to go back and check back through Kings and Chronicles, figure all that out. But just interesting to see the Bible yet again confirmed by the archaeologist Spade, leading us to say, now that is science, really. We don't have a lot of time, and that's one of the worst guitar solos in history anyways, so there's no sense in muddling through all that. We'll get right back to the news. I'm going to dispense with this story from the War File. My extremely attractive audio engineer is starting to lose interest because the show is just too serious. It's too serious of a show, so I wonder if I should even bring up this whole thing about vaccines. I don't think I want to bring up this. Oh, here we go. Let's go to the good Pope file. Set vaccines aside for just a moment. The good Pope file, in his weekly general audience, Pope Francis reiterated that every family needs a father. Good Pope. Hey, throw the Pope a Pope cracker. That was. He says a good father knows how to forgive. Of course, he also knows how to correct firmly. A good father is not weak, yielding, or sentimental. The father who knows how to correct without humiliating is the same one that knows how to protect unsparingly. Now that is just good Pope material. I know the Pope to me is should probably be diagnosed as schizophrenic, because he'll say something like this, which is good Pope, throw him a cracker type thing, and then he'll come out and say something utterly communist, and I just don't understand it. Now, so the Pope basically said that it's okay for fathers to spank. Yes, he says the father has to punish. He does it in the right way, and then he moves on, said the Pope. He made a reference to the legitimacy of corporal punishment, which led the humanist campaigners to absolutely flip out and start frothing at the mouth. Humanist anti-spanking campaigners were quick to express their consternation, according to this report from Breitbart, or at least as linked to on Breitbart. We have one of these humanist campaigners against spanking, Peter Newell, the coordinator of the Global Alliance to End Corporal Punishment of Children. It's a global alliance to end corporal punishment for children. And here is what Peter Newell had to say about the Pope. He said, what the Pope said is disappointing. It's disappointing that anyone with that sort of influence would make such a comment. It's just not helpful. That was the Global Alliance to End Corporal Punishment for Children. Now, Pope Francis also said that the most important thing is for fathers to be present in the family, to be close to his wife and close to his children without being overbearing or controlling. Well, I can't argue with that. That's pretty good, Pope. You know? Well, I can just picture him like a seal, you know? When he does the right thing, they throw him a sardine. He's like, oh, oh, oh. Good Pope. All right. Let's see. I'm trying to find something to keep the...
It's okay.
I want to keep my extremely attractive audio engineer interested. The polygamists on TV. TV star, polygamist Cody Brown, has divorced his first official wife and shockingly married the youngest of his four spiritual brides. This according to the Daily Mail. They report that Cody appears to live in marital bliss with four wives, Mary, Christine, Robin, Janelle, and their 17 children, on TV in front of God and everybody on TLC there. And within just 3 months of him divorcing his very first wife, apparently that's the only one he was actually married to legally, because it's against the law. The other wives are just spiritual wives. Well, he divorced the oldest one, and he married the youngest one. So, can you believe that? I'm sure everybody feels wonderful about the whole situation. I'm sure all the wives are just lovey-dovey. Yeah, I like the way they put the, Cody appears to live in marital bliss with his four wives. Yeah, appearances can be deceiving. He divorced Mary Brown last September. Within 3 months, he married the youngest. But Mary has decided to stay. It's kind of like me with the Republican Party. You know, no matter how bad it gets, you keep coming back. What? She doesn't know what to do, right? I mean, she has no visible means of support. She's not going to walk out of this polygamous freak show. It's at the height of its ratings. She's not going away. Let's see. You see, here's what happened. Cody, the polygamist father, the pervert, he wanted to bring the youngest girl's three kids in from a previous marriage, see, so that they'll have more security and a better life. She has a son and two daughters from her first marriage, and she's had one kid with this pervert already, and they weren't even married, now they're getting married. All of Robin's children refer to Cody as dad. Their biological father is alive. Robin is divorced from him, as far as we know. What else do we have? Oh, all of his wives, except one, were raised in polygamist families. The one is Janelle. Now, I don't know these people. I don't watch the show, but apparently Janelle's family was not polygamist, but her mother is now in a polygamous relationship with Cody's father.
Oh, I thought maybe Cody.
No, you thought maybe Cody. Well, anything's possible, right? Sure, Mom, come on in. You never know with these people. It's disgusting. The fact that this is on television proves that we've lost the Republic, that the forces of darkness are in the lead, and it's amazing that people just have no shame, and they've made a financially successful entertainment program out of criminal behavior is what they've done.
You know what
it's disgusting.
They go by Christian.
Oh yes, they claim to be Christians. Now they're Mormons. Yeah, Mormons.
A lot of people think they're
Sure, Mormons, Christians, whatever. Yeah. Just so you know, I want to go back to Nebuchadnezzar in Babylon, the ancient tablets there.
Polygamist?
Well, I'm sure he was a polygamist. But the bottom line is that the archaeologist Spade is yet to confirm a single line in the Book of Mormon. But it has confirmed the Bible hundreds and hundreds of times over. All right. Now, on vaccinations, I'm going to address this really quick. Because, and I know I'm going to lose some listeners right now. So, you know, I'm really sorry. It's been great having you listen. Goodbye. But you know, I want to put my statement forward on vaccinations because of this whole measles outbreak. This is a topic that can lead to blows, even gunfire, I'm sure. I believe that as adults, we're all free to choose which medical treatments and medicines and drugs to take or not to take, okay? I think we're all free people. But I also believe we have a responsibility to look out for the health and well-being of our fellow man and especially our children. So when it comes to the basic vaccinations, measles, mumps, rubella, polio, there's a half a dozen of them, maybe a dozen. I think you should get them. I'm not saying the government should impose them on you and tie you down and inject them into you forcibly, but I think it's wise to get them. Now, I have seen a significant increase in autism, ADD, ADHD, asthma, and allergies in my lifetime. I agree that there's something's going on. What is all this stuff, right? It's definitely on the increase. And I also believe, by the way, that vaccines can and do make people sick and kill some people. There is a risk in getting vaccinated, like with many medical treatments. A lot of times when you go in for a surgery or chemotherapy, you know, the doctors tell the family, hey, he might not wake up. We could kill him trying to save him. It's just the facts of life. But I think that if vaccinations were responsible in some kind of systemic way or systematic way for any syndrome of illnesses, ADHD, AAD, asthma, allergies, I think if there was some systemic connection that the data would be known and the link would be established and it would be known as a fact. There would be no denying it. And I, as far as I know, that data just is not evident. I've never seen it. So anyway, the reason we vaccinated our children was protect them and to protect their neighbors, other little kids who may not have been vaccinated yet. Maybe they're too young. Maybe they have a medical condition where they can't get a vaccination. So the last thing I want is for my kid or someone in my family to be a vector for some disease that gets someone else sick. And just to remind you people who just have no clue about history, in the United States back in 1952, there was a polio epidemic that was the worst in the nation's history. Let's see here. There were over 57,000 cases of polio reported that year. Over 3,000 people died. And over 20,000 were left with paralysis, some sort of paralysis. So, you know, these young parents today, they just don't remember any of this. They don't remember when diseases used to come through and terrorize and wipe out communities. And so they feel like they don't have to vaccinate. But I feel like there are certain vaccinations we have not gotten for our kids, right? We don't do the flu vaccine because that's kind of hit or miss. We don't give them the vaccines against VD, for crying out loud. So I'm trying to stake out a moderate position so that I don't offend people. But basically, measles was over. It was gone. And now it's back. So anyway, there's always a risk with everything. We often take risks to protect ourselves, to protect our neighbors. And I want to state that I do believe the government has the authority to compel medical treatment in order to control an epidemic. And I'm not talking about an epidemic of a few hundred measles cases. I don't think it's the time for the government to start coming in and forcibly vaccinating anyone. But I'm talking about a real epidemic, like 1952, when over almost 60,000 people were diagnosed with polio. When things get to that level, it's time for the government to step in and take care of public health. And I know the government's full of evil, sick, bad, vicious people. But, you know, let's not get caught up in accusing the entire medical industry of just existing to get us sick, keep us sick, and eventually kill us after taking all our money, giving us all their rotten drugs. I think that's just an overreaction. So I think there's kind of a middle way here. Get the vaccinations that make sense, and don't get the vaccines for stupid stuff like VD, you know. Anyway, that's there. So I've probably lost a few listeners, but you know what? Life goes on. Let's, I just don't want to do any more from the war file. It's so depressing. Let's go to the justice file. This is rather depressing, as a matter of fact. The U.S. Supreme Court has put on hold the execution in Texas of convicted murderer Lester Bauer. Why have they put his execution on hold? They're thinking they might hear his appeal that asserts that his 3 decades on death row amounts to cruel and unusual punishment. Yes, he was sentenced to death for murdering 4 men back in 1983. And since then, he and his lawyers have fought tooth and nail to keep him out of the death chamber. And now they've turned around and filed an appeal saying the 30 years you've kept him alive, that's cruel and unusual punishment. Only a lawyer could do that. And only a group of lawyers in black robes, like we see on the U.S. Supreme Court, could seriously consider hearing an appeal that states the fact that I've been fighting for my life for 30 years and I've managed to keep myself out of the death chamber. Well, now I'm going to say that amounts to cruel and unusual punishment. And then the wise lawyers on the Supreme Court say, well, that he may have a point there. We'll have to hear that. By the way, Lester Bowers killed Bob Tate to steal an ultralight plane that Tate was trying to sell, and then he killed 3 other men who unexpectedly showed up in the hangar. Now the court, you'll remember, has also blocked 3 executions in Oklahoma this past year while it considers, well, whether a specific sedative used by Oklahoma as part of their lethal injection procedure constitutes cruel and unusual punishment. So they're willing to consider the fact that a sedative may constitute cruel and unusual punishment. It's a sedative for crime. I don't understand these people. It's just unbelievable. All right, finally, we go to the sad religion file. Let's see here. We're going to go over to Scandinavia. Now, what is Scandinavia? That's like Norway, Denmark, and Sweden, right? Well, back in Scandinavia, back in the old days, they used to worship their pagan gods, Thor, Odin, and Frigg. Well, now, that pagan worship gave way to Christianity around 1,000 years ago. But now, a modern version of Norse paganism has been gaining popularity in Iceland, and Icelanders will soon be able to publicly worship at a shrine they're constructing to the gods Thor, Odin, and Frigg. I wasn't aware of Frigg. I'd heard of Thor and Odin, but Frigg I was not familiar with. But apparently, the temple that they're building is going to be built on a hill overlooking the Icelandic capital of Reykjavik. And then all the pagans can go there as part of membership in a new religion called Asatrufargalahagi. I really can't pronounce it, but there's about 300 and, no, no, there's only 330,000 people in Iceland, and the Church of Asatrufargalahagir has about 2,400 members. 2,400 pagans are going to go up on the hill. You know, the Bible says that we battle not against flesh and blood, but against powers and principalities, spiritual powers in high places. So they're building this this pagan temple on a hill overlooking the Icelandic capital of Reykjavik in similar fashion to how they used to do it back in Babylon. And even in Israel, they built their groves and temples on the high places, and they burned incense on their shrines. And so I would advise you people to get familiar with the Bible, because the history that you'll read in the Bible, it's repeating itself in cycle after cycle all over the world. And the cycles tend to ebb and flow, and every once in a while crescendo. And I think we're not on an ebb. I think we're on a flow, and we may be approaching a crescendo one way or another. And well, I plan to be involved and engaged. I plan to participate. And I hope you do too. So that's it. That's the Weekly Worldview. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Should the Lord tarry, I'll return next week. And I want to thank my friends at KGOV, Denver Bible Church, American Right to Life, and TheologyOnline.com, along with my other brother, Darrell, who makes it all happen here in the Weekly Worldview studios. Should the Lord tarry, indeed, I will return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.